Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Over the weekend, folks from the St. Louis region gathered in Midtown St. Louis for an event called Unmask. Organized by the Village Path, the third annual Unmask was an evening dedicated to self-identified men, sharing about the ways masculinity shows up in how they live, how they relate to others, and how they heal. But that kind of sharing and community should not be limited to yearly events. And our guests today can attest to that truth, both in their professional and personal lives, when it comes to Black men who are more vulnerable to mental health challenges than men of other racial groups. Joining us to talk about barriers and benefits to supporting Black men's mental health, we welcome Fred Williams, psychotherapist for Mental Alchemy Counseling. Fred, welcome to the show.
Hi, Elaine. Thanks for having me.
And we also have joining us Bryant Antoine, co-founder of The Village Path and licensed behavioral analyst. Bryant, you've been on the show before. Welcome back to you.
Thank you.
So in the introduction, I'd mentioned Black men's comparative vulnerability to mental health challenges, and that stems from systemic social and cultural issues that are deeply enmeshed with one another. Now, Fred, what are one or two very common symptoms of mental health challenges that you see in Black men that maybe don't show up in the same way in non-Black men?
Well, I think one of the biggest symptoms I see is just not being able to communicate our feelings, not knowing how, growing up, not feeling safe enough to be vulnerable with anyone, or taking the chance on being vulnerable with someone and it backfires. But also a system where when you are truthful and open up about things, it can backfire against you. Mm-hmm. It could be something where you're just, these spaces haven't always been meant for us, and so it can be tough for us to open up about those, mm-hmm. about our feelings and challenges.
And when you say backfire, are there some things that you have learned from those you've worked with over time? Of course, maintaining anonymity, mm-hmm. but things, situations wherein that backfiring has happened?
Well, we're more likely to be put on medication where it may not need to be the first option. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, here, take this for the rest of your life, and we're going to numb it with that instead of addressing the root cause or finding you a counselor that you feel safe enough with to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. And so this path of, medication and maybe other ways that people are seeking to take care of these underlying issues, mm-hmm. what are the ways that people do try to take care of themselves and not do so very successfully?
Oh, those are the two big ones, marijuana and alcohol, I would mm-hmm. say. Mm-hmm. I see the most in my practice. So instead of addressing it and feeling those feelings, that uncomfortableness of whatever it is you want to get out and bring to the surface, and whenever it comes up, you just numb it down. Mm-hmm. Just numb it with alcohol and marijuana.
Mm-hmm. How is it that those challenges, Fred, are unique to Black men, or at least more prevalent? Some might say what you're talking about is common to everyone. What is it about Black men and the culture maybe they're growing up in, or some of the things we talked about as far as the systemic issues, mm-hmm. that just make these more acute among Black males?
Yeah, well, we may not have easy access to healthcare or a mental professional, but we can find a liquor store on almost every corner. Mm-hmm. Or in our culture, every rap song you see, there's liquor in it. There's mm-hmm. marijuana in it. So what we see is what we're using.
Mm-hmm. As far as your personal journey goes, you were not someone who became a psychotherapist as your first profession. Mm-hmm. There were some things that came before that, right?
Yeah, so When I graduated from the University of Illinois in 06, and I really had no idea what I wanted to do. I thought I was going to be a lawyer. I was a speech communication and political science major, and I decided I didn't want to do that. And I followed some friends into sales. And so for roughly, 11 years, I had several different sales jobs that were high pressure, high stress, lots of travel. It felt like I had lots of bosses. My customers and clients were my bosses, and I was trying to please a lot of people, and I didn't handle that stress and pressure very well. So instead of seeking therapy, meditation, yoga, going to the gym, I would just push it back with alcohol and avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally reached out, well, my primary care physician recommended that I see a therapist, and the first experience wasn't the best experience.
How so?
Well, the first therapist I saw was a white woman, and it was nothing against her. It's just we didn't click, and that's a common thing when looking for a therapist. If a person may go seek a therapist, and it doesn't work out, until like I'm throwing therapy out the window. It's crap. It doesn't work.
Right.
But I suggest keep looking until you find that fit. And the second therapist I found, his name was Ed, and he was a black man, and he heard me. It's not necessarily a skin color thing. It's a cultural thing. He was easily able to put himself in my shoes without knowing me. He had a big idea of what my life had been like, some of the struggles I'd been like. He knew what it's like to be black in this world.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bryant, as far as what you have experienced, are there some very common symptoms that you see in the people you have come into contact with, either through your work as a behavioral analyst or through the Village Path?
Yeah, definitely. I think that typically the common symptoms or common issues that people come to us with are just like simple or common issues that anyone would have, just general sense of like confusion about where they are in life, issues with relationships, it's really struggling with higher ed, like in school, and just like all types of things, and usually like the issues that we find is that, people never had the blueprint on how to access therapy and never were taught that, if you are struggling with something, to share and express it with someone, and so a lot of people just kind of like keep it bottled up. And usually when it gets to us, just through the Village Path, people are finally at that point where they're ready to share, and they're ready to have conversations about it. And usually it's at the point where it's kind of built up to a point where it's getting really serious for them.
Yeah. And have you found, Bryant, that what you're doing is appealing to younger generation folks? Is there a sort of a representation across generations as far as those people who are like coming to the point where they're feeling like, I need to do something about this and I need to do it now?
Yes, definitely. Really good question. Definitely. We see this across many generations, folks who, access our services or are part of our community, span from, anywhere from like teenager, to young kids to like, I think our oldest person is 74, And so like, this is like everyone, mm-hmm. And I think now we live in an age where, it's important to talk about these issues and it's important to talk about mental health support, and people are coming out and they're finally ready to like have these conversations. And so, having our age range be so wide is great because then, gives role models to the younger generation, to say like, it's okay to do these things. It's okay to like express yourselves. It's okay to seek, support. It's okay to say, I love you and I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of modeling that for like our younger generation.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like the blueprint is something that's also in the making. It's not necessarily something that's already made or done. So you mentioned, Bryant, something about people sharing. We opened the show with a reference to Unmask that happened over the weekend. And part of what the Village Path offers is a healing and writing circle. Can you tell us what that is and what it is that it does for participants, you know, across generations and experiences?
Yeah. We did have our third annual Unmask event on Saturday. We had about 160 people there, and that event is to give men and people of just all like identities, backgrounds, an opportunity to share about a serious like event that happened in our lives, or like how masculinity has impacted them. And so that event is amazing. We will continue to have that event every October. And in addition to that, we have our Healing and Writing Circle, which we have every third Tuesday of the month at the Bullet-Related Injury Clinic, which is housed in Del Mar Divine. And it's a great event where it actually functions as a support group where we can come together as Black men, and we have some kids who come through, and we could just talk about our issues, whether it be pains, our joys, or anything that's happening in our life. We can celebrate that, and then we also have a writing component or some type of art component, because a lot of what we do includes art, and we can share out in that way as well. Mm-hmm. And it really gives people an opportunity to kind of like connect to one another and just be in community together in a type of space that isn't like truly represented, anywhere else in our community.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Bryant Antoine, who's a licensed behavioral analyst and the co-founder of The Village Path. He's also the leader of the Healing and Writing Circle for The Village Path. And we're talking with Fred Williams, who's a psychotherapist at Mental Alchemy Counseling. So I understand that, Fred, you and Bryant know one another because of another program that is offered through the Village Path. But before we get to that, what is it, from your perspective as someone who works with people one-on-one, Fred, what is the benefit of not only having individual time, but also being connected to a community?
I think it's everything. Having that weekly or every other week time that you know is dedicated to you working on you. Let's say you come in with several goals that you want to work on, but hey, life has happened since the last time we saw each other. You can go off script. It's whatever you want that space to be. I found that once people feel safe enough to just let it out, that's really where true healing starts to begin. Mm-hmm. And if you're practicing that one-on-one, it gets easier when you get into a big group space like Bryant's providing. Well, he's also providing the one-on-one space with me, partnering with him. But when you get into those group spaces, it just comes out a little easier. One guy opens up, then another person gets permission to open up, and it's a domino effect. I went to one once, and I thought I was just kind of there to just observe. I ended up opening up like a book, just seeing all the healing that was going on.
Mm-hmm. So, Bryant, those sessions that the Village Path offers, this is very significant as far as that access problem, Fred, that you mentioned earlier in the conversation. Talk with us about what the process of that five-session approach, what it is.
Yeah. So we call it our therapy access program, or the Village Tap. And basically it functions as similar to an EAP, where people can sign up. There aren't really any specific requirements, or there aren't many hoops that you have to jump through. You can just sign up, and we connect that person to a Black therapist, and they get to try it, or they get to reconnect with therapy. If they tried it, like Fred explained, they tried it and, it didn't work for them in the past. They get to give it another shot. Mm-hmm. And hopefully with that'll be kind of like the springboard into a long-term relationship in therapy, so that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And it's so, it is significant because, I think that as we start to have these conversations about therapy and getting people access to therapy, we have to acknowledge that, connecting with a therapist isn't always linear. That process takes some time and some effort and some energy. And where we at the Village Probably are just trying to connect folks to, you know, therapy as easy as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's part of the access, you know, component is connecting you to a therapist and providing that financial support as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that you actually get that service.
So, Fred, 5 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like, you know, it's a lot. Maybe it isn't. I mean, is 5 sessions kind of a sweet spot for getting someone, you know, to a certain place? And without naming names, can you recall, you know, working with someone where that number of sessions really did seem to get the person to where they needed to go next?
I think 5 is a great start to get you an experience to, like Brian said, to try it out. And I've seen it go from 5, and then they continue on to pay their own way, and we go from there. But yeah, I've also seen men just take the 5, and they get to a place of, I don't know if there's this magical place of healed that anyone ever gets to,
mm-hmm.
but I've seen a good majority get on the path towards healing,
yeah.
or even just getting a good cry in to just come and talk and feel safe and let your guard down and take your mask off and just be you.
Mm-hmm.
It's I can tell you, it's been a blessing for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, the overwhelming majority of people who are working in mental health as professionals, the majority are white.
Mm-hmm.
As of 2015, only 4% of American psychologists or therapists were Black. So how important is it to have a therapist who can culturally relate to a client? And how does gender specifically come into this, Fred?
Well, representation matters. I told you about my experience with a Black male therapist. However, right now, my therapist is a Black woman. But some men may not be at that place where they're ready to speak to even a Black woman. So, again, representation matters tremendously, just from a cultural aspect, to be able to feel comfortable and secure in those spaces.
Yeah.
And sometimes having a person that looks like you and can relate to what you've been through matters a lot.
Mm-hmm. Bryant, have you found the same in working with those who come through the Village Path, or maybe yourself with the past experiences you have had? Is that cultural competency plus, you know, the gender, being able to relate on the lines of gender, something that's important?
Definitely, definitely. I think, like Fred said, like, representation matters. There's a component of therapy where, like, you can't, like, filter yourself, right?
Yeah.
Like, as a client, you should be able to, like, freely express yourself, right? And sometimes, even if we don't mean to, right, we're in a space with someone who doesn't really look like us, sometimes we filter ourselves, you know? I could say that myself. Like, there's some topics of, you know, of course, had white therapists myself, and there's just certain things, like, I don't feel comfortable talking to them about, you know? And it shouldn't be that way. Like, it should be an open book, you know? And you should be able to have an open book in order to kind of, like, break down some of the core issues, right, that you have. So yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely makes a big difference.
Yeah. And as we wrap here, the last 30 seconds for each of you, 30 each,
mm-hmm.
what is most encouraging about what you're seeing now? I mean, like, having this conversation, is this a bit of progress, Fred?
I'm very hopeful for the future. I see it on TV. I'm seeing it in movies. I'm seeing spaces like the Collective STL where Black folks are gathering to do yoga. I'm seeing run clubs where Black folks are taking their mental health seriously, and it's becoming cool,
mm-hmm.
and acceptable. And I know I keep meeting more and more therapists coming through graduate programs, and I'm just hopeful for the future.
Mm-hmm. And Bryant, how about you?
Yeah, same. I see momentum, you know, yoga, hiking, just this, like, holistic terror like approach, you know, that we just haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And community, you know, people sharing in community and being there for one another in a way that's beautiful. And so I'm hopeful that this will continue to grow, especially in a wonderful city like St. Louis.
Right. Bryant Antoine is co-founder of The Village Path and a licensed behavioral analyst. And Fred Williams is psychotherapist for Mental Alchemy Counseling. Fred and Bryant, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Jada Jones.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.